This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Coming down the home stretch now with 90-year-old Navy veteran Bob Ashburn. He grew up in Torrington, Wyoming, but Atwater, California is where he and his wife Edna have been since 1957. You'll find a photo of that happy couple at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. When we left off, Bob had given us a little insight to the massive scope of the kamikaze phenomenon at Okinawa, his final battle aboard the USS Tisdale during World War II. So you saw kamikazes hit other ships. You saw kamikazes get shot down. How close was this all happening to you?
The closest one, I thought, oh, hey, and I'll back up, but this was the one that really... This guy was coming on to us from astern. That's the least way we could get any firepower going. And we're back there standing up. Here's your depth charge racks and there's two guys here. And that bugger was coming in on us. Oh, man, this we're probably going to get us. But about maximum 50 yards away, that guy was still coming down on us and strafing us. And you look up there and you see on his wings just sparks coming off. Looks like sparks coming off there, but that's and of course that's to, you know, try and knock down our guys. When you see that, and about 50 yards away, I said, oh boy, he was coming head on into us. But we got a direct hit, must have hit on his bomb, because that plane just blew up and throwing, you know, parts of it, splashing all around us, but he didn't make it there. Then other times they were pretty close. How we could see there, when you see those sparks coming off their wings, hey, they're then when you go out and you're hitting them, and you're hitting, you know, some aluminum with this bullet, it's like little white puffs of smoke coming off. When they get in that close, then you know they're getting on you. But as this fleet is, here's this bunch, and there's that bunch, and that, you know, a few miles apart. But whichever one they picked on, that's the one that's caught the worst. You're just hoping they'd pick on somebody else. Now, the next thing a lot of people don't kind of know either, the kamikazes, they were one chirp. They just went and that was it. But then in these same raids, they'd had their regular Air Force. You know, their bombers, torpedoes. They did their thing and turned around and went back. We're talking hundreds a day. So when I hear about these little airstrikes back in the Far East, it's peanuts. We had hundreds of raids. But there's one time there, we were at general quarters for 40 solid hours. They're trying to get you, and you're trying to stop them.
Can't imagine what that feels like. I mean, there's got to be part of you that says, there's no way I'm going to make it through this.
Well, at Okinawa, almost constantly. There were so damn many of them, and they just kept coming. They had 2,500 planes, like, lost in just to Okinawa. And you get 2,500 planes after, you know, your odds get... We just kept thinking, well... Now, see, because we lost half of our squadron. We thought, when the hell we're going to be next? But we lucked out.
The lucky T. And you told us about one of those times where you were very fortunate with that kamikaze coming straight at you. He's strafing you. And you said 50 yards away, he blows up because one of your guns hit him?
Yes. On this size ship, the biggest gun was a 3-inch. It had to be a hit from... this one aft gun that was shooting back. Now, see, over on the sides of them, they could have the 20s and the 40s pound them, but to blow them up like they did, we figured he had to hit the bomb because, I mean, it just blew up. Hey, and enough, close enough, got slapped in the face from the concussion. When it's like that, that's pretty damn close.
So you felt it. When it exploded, you felt that.
Oh, yeah. Just like slapping you like that.
So a few questions here. A... If that gunner doesn't hit that plane, what would have happened?
It would have wiped out that whole, see, the K-guns, four on each side, and then that first, see, that gun that got him, he was one deck up, but it would have wiped them out, too. Hard telling how far, but it see, that kind of a ship can't take bad damage.
Would you be here? Would you be sitting here talking to me if that guy hadn't shot him down?
No.
What if they had shot him up, but not blown him up? In other words, hit him, disable him, but not explode him.
He would have still went in. Because, see, that was the deal. They knew they was going to get shot at. If they're strafing or anything they're doing, didn't do anything. Because when that plane comes down, say the bomb goes off, the plane crashing into you, and then that gasoline burning. Mm-hmm. So it's
fun. I don't want to exaggerate, but I'm just listening to you recount this story, and it sounds to me that that shot that that gunner had on him was kind of a one in a million shot. If he hits him anywhere else on that plane, you're not here.
Yes, most definite. After this is over, this guy's back there talking. He says, hey, that was it. We thought bad. And you go through that day after day.
Well, let me ask you this, because I've heard a lot of different perspectives on this. When you go through something like that, when you live through that and you realize how close you were and how nearly impossible it was for your life to be spared in that moment, yet it still happened. Do you feel like someone was looking out for you? Was there someone there protecting you?
I said my prayers every night, and I've said the same prayer ever since. It was just by the grace of God we made it. That's all I can figure. Here are these buddy ships, they're getting wiped out. And you just say, well, we lucked out that time. Lucky to you.
And you never would have met your wife? You never would have had kids, grandkids, a great-grandchild?
It's been a good life. Got one hell of a good wife. I'll tell you that. It's just unbelievable the way things can happen and work out for you. Have a nice family, nice wife. And fortunately, made it through it all that. We didn't live high, but we lived good. And I still was saying the same prayer.
I know that you stayed in for a couple of years after World War II. You went into the reserves. You got recalled for Korea and spent two more years at wartime in the Navy. But many, many years later, you got to experience something that more and more veterans are getting a chance to do, the Honor Flight. You went with Central Valley Honor Flight to Washington, D.C., to see the World War II Memorial, that wall of gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who didn't come home. And you just told us how close you were to not coming home. What was that experience like for you?
Same as I'm going through now. It brings back all that old bad stuff. I think it's a wonderful thing they did. And as soon as they got in touch with me for donations to start building that, I said, hey, it's about time, and we've always supported that.
And when you say donations, you're talking about the memorial, because a lot of people don't know. They assume that the government built that memorial. No, that's $190 million of private money, mostly from World War II veterans like yourself, to build that memorial.
Yeah.
And sorry, I know I interrupted you. I wanted to make clear people knew you donated to the memorial, not to Honor Flight, because Honor Flight won't take a penny from a World War II veteran unless you take a free flight first. And that was an idea. They took you there to show you that memorial, the other memorials, the changing of the guard at Arlington, and hopefully send a message of thank you and that we get it. Thank you for serving our country, and we owe you a debt of gratitude. Did that feeling come through for you?
I would say I used my grandson for a guardian. I wanted to do my son, but my son got in touch with him, and he's an EMT. He's a captain of the fire department up in Seattle. And as soon as he started talking, he said, hey, you know, we can use you. We got two nurses, but we can use an EMT. This is a little side story, but it worked out fine, because on the flight, one guy had some kind of an attack. A son had his little bag along. A thing that really got to me, that guy was just two seats ahead of us. The next two guys was there when it was over. One guy says, if anything ever happens to me, I want that guy working on me. That did something for me. You know.
They were talking about your son.
Yeah.
Proud papa.
Yeah. Yes, yes, very.
That whole experience from taking off to all the things you saw in Washington to coming back to a cheering crowd for you, what was the most meaningful part of it for you?
I'd like to say, can I say three? The vets back in Baltimore put on a big dinner for us. That was great. You know, talking with us and all that stuff. The next one was the reception we got when we came into Baltimore. All kinds of people out there to greet us. And then the next one was on our back end at Fresno, and we were way late. We thought, oh, well, nobody will be there to meet us. There was a mob. So that was three.
I remember it well. Well, I'm sorry for making you so emotional. I know none of this is easy to talk about, but it's so powerful for the rest of us to know that you lived it and that it was not easy and that it took great sacrifice to win that war. For those of us who weren't around then, who didn't live through World War II, what do you think is important for us to remember and understand?
To be very patriotic, this country needs a change. We're slipping around from the, and I don't want to be a good person, you know, and all that kind of stuff, but we had a good generation back in those days. All the things that everybody done, I thank them all.
Well, we thank you. Thank you for serving, and thank you for telling us a story that only you could tell us. Is there anything else that you think we need to know?
We did the right thing. Otherwise, what would it all have been? It was a terrible sacrifice. When I left my mama, 30 months before I saw her again, I know she went through hell because they were getting all the reports back, all the things they were going through. And as a matter of fact, this kamikaze stuff started at the Philippines. However, the government and the Navy and us had, they put a clamp on the news. That news didn't get back until we got to Okinawa. The things like my mother was going through, and other people's mother, everybody had hard times. We were a patriotic bunch. I'm not too sure we are anymore.
You said, from the time you said goodbye to your mama, it was 30 months till you saw her again. What was it like when you saw her again?
Heartbreaking. And, you know, good. Good heartbreaking, crying. Of course, she's so happy that we made it. It didn't mean that much to me then. Something we did, and we just did it.
One last thing I want to ask you before I forget, and I know you got a lot to choose from here at age 90, but what are you most proud of, and what are you most thankful for?
Being here. And I do say my prayers every night. I am thankful that we made it. And another little bad thing of our ship, of all the guys we knew, and we'd have these get-togethers. We started out every 2 years. And then we said, hey, we're losing some guys. We better shut this down to 1 year. Now we're down to just three left. Three. So all the old guys are gone. And here I am, thankful to be here. And with the way everything's turned out for us, it's been nice.
Well, it sure has been nice for us to spend this hour with you. Bob Ashburn, 90 years old, of Atwater, California. What sincere and intense emotion we heard today from this Navy veteran of World War II, and what powerful perspective he's left us with. We're out of time on today's program, but thank you for listening, and thanks to Bob for reminding us again that freedom is not free.